Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today on our Capitol Report, hear about Republican efforts to impeach President Joe Biden despite a lack of evidence to date. New waves of migrants are turning up in Hakumba as local migrant shelters are once again filled to capacity. Padre Dam Water District has appointed a new director to fill the vacancy left by the death of Augie Cares. There's a buzz in La Mesa, where council members have just approved a beekeeping ordinance. Health officials are warning of a tuberculosis case at San Diego State University. On Crime Beat, an elderly jogger in El Cajon fought off a would-be mugger with a long criminal record. Then on Destination East County, hear about some fun festivals and events coming up, from Oktoberfest to Halloween haunts and more. Our newsmaker interview today is with Jay Steiger, a teacher and parent who is running for the Grossmont Union High School District Board, and he's speaking out against the board majority's recent decision to cancel a contract with a mental health provider, a move that Steiger says puts LGBTQ students at risk. We'll also have a warning from CAL FIRE about aerial drones interfering with firefighting operations at wildfires, an action that's illegal and could result in stiff penalties for drone operators. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Cecily Shamino with a Capitol Report. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy has directed that an impeachment inquiry be opened into President Joe Biden. McCarthy made the announcement while under pressure from right-wing extremists in the House who are threatening to shut down the government and have threatened to remove McCarthy as Speaker if he did not agree to their demands. McCarthy claims that unsubstantiated allegations of abuse of power, obstruction, and corruption warrant further investigation to learn whether Biden ever benefited financially from business dealings of his son, Hunter Biden. Republican-led investigations in Congress have spent months researching those claims, yet major media outlets confirm that to date, no proof to substantiate those claims has been found. National Public Radio, or NPR, states, "There has been no evidence that the president has benefited financially from any of his son Hunter Biden's dealings." Time magazine reports that two impeachment scholars have concluded that there is no evidence that Biden committed any high crimes or misdemeanors, the constitutional standard required for impeachment. Nor has there been any indication of obstruction by Biden, as some Republicans claim. In fact, all documents subpoenaed or sought by the Republican-led committee have been turned over by the White House. Republican Congressman James Comer even appeared on Fox Business Network last month and confirmed that he received 100% of records that he requested as chair of the Oversight Committee. While some GOP members have cited a desire to review bank and credit card records, the committee has not bothered to request those records. McCarthy issued the order unilaterally without calling for a vote by the full House, likely because such a vote would fail, as even some moderate Republicans have voiced opposition to opening an impeachment hearing with no evidence. Yet the Trump Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel issued an opinion that the House must expressly authorize a committee to conduct an impeachment investigation for proceedings to be legal. Thus, Biden could challenge the action based on the Trump-era legal opinion. Former President Donald Trump, also a presidential candidate, has called for House Republicans to impeach Biden and suggests Biden's impeachment is retaliation for House Democrats twice impeaching Trump. Trump told Megyn Kelly on SiriusXM that Biden likely would not have been impeached, quote, "had they not done it to me." The Democratic National Committee issued this statement in response. Donald Trump argued what we already know. Republicans' baseless impeachment inquiry is motivated by politics and revenge. Trump was twice impeached but not convicted. The first was in 2019 over withholding military aid from Ukraine and pressuring Ukraine's leadership to investigate the Biden family when Trump was running against Biden. The second impeachment came days after the January 6, 2021 Capitol insurrection, after Trump falsely claimed the election was stolen from him and urged his followers to march on the Capitol, where violence occurred in an attempt to disrupt counting of ballots in the 2020 presidential election. Trump has since been criminally charged on 91 counts, many of them tied to a conspiracy by Trump and his followers to overturn the legitimate results of the 2020 election through a violent mob, pressuring state election officials to break the law and an elaborate fake electors scheme. The Joe Biden impeachment inquiry is conveniently timed to distract from negative news for Republicans, including criminal trials of Trump soon to commence in Washington, D.C., Florida, Georgia, and New York, congressional Republicans trying to shut down the government over a budget impasse, and Republican Senator Tommy Tuberville blocking confirmations for secretaries of the Navy, Air Force, and Marines unless funding is canceled for military women to travel out of state for abortion access. Tuberville's actions have left all three branches of the military without leaders, a situation military experts criticize as dangerous. While no one has disputed that Hunter Biden appeared to shamelessly capitalize on his famous father, there has been no evidence that Joe Biden profited from those efforts, nor have any criminal actions been filed against Hunter Biden related to his business activities. Hunter Biden has been criminally indicted, but on charges of filing taxes late and failing to disclose drug use when he purchased a gun that he owned for 11 days. GOP efforts to impeach President Biden appear at a time to be grasping at straws. For example, conservative media outlets have made hay out of the fact that Biden, as vice president, sometimes used private email addresses under pseudonyms. But so did the administration of George W. Bush and Barack Obama, as Mother Jones reported back in 2013. Mother Jones, and more recently The Hill, reported that high-ranking officials often use pseudonyms to avoid hackers or spammers in sensitive communications. Mother Jones likened this to the modern equivalent of an unlisted phone number. While this raises potential transparency issues in some cases, such as certain Bush-era emails routed through the Republican National Committee, emails preserved under the Presidential Records Act, as Obama and Biden appear to have done, are above board, Mother Jones's investigation concluded. Both the Biden and Obama administrations have retained all emails, including those sent or received under aliases, as public records archived under the federal law. Back in 2013, White House Press Secretary Jay Carney called this practice consistent with prior administrations of both parties, CBS reported. San Diego Republican Congressman Daryl Issa said he fully supports the impeachment inquiry. He accused President Biden and his family of a culture of corruption that is crippling this presidency. Issa, a senior member of the House Judiciary Committee, did not cite any evidence, but pointed to what he claimed was profiteering from the selling of access and the peddling of influence by Biden's family. Issa's opponent, Stephen Houlihan, told Times of San Diego, "The impeachment probe is completely uncalled for and unsubstantiated under the rule of law. Daryl Issa and the Republicans in Congress are abusing their power and failing to properly represent the constituents who elected them," Houlihan said. House Oversight Committee member Jamie Raskin, a Democrat, asked Chairman James Comer, a Republican, to conduct hearings into potential legal violations by Trump's family members, but Comer has refused to do so. So Raskin announced that the committee's Democrats will issue a report detailing millions of dollars that Trump, three of his children, and son-in-law Jared Kushner have allegedly pocketed from foreign governments and other foreign entities, profiting off their famous father's presidency.
Back in May, East County Magazine reported on a humanitarian crisis in Hakumba Hot Springs, a small desert town in eastern San Diego County where over 1,000 stranded migrants were left without food, water, shade, or shelter. Our report led to a report filed 2 days later by the U.S. Immigration Policy Center at UC San Diego titled Lives in Danger. Our coverage also resulted in the Southern Border Communities Coalition filing a federal complaint with Homeland Security alleging mistreatment by Border Patrol agents of asylum seekers in Hakumba, as well as violations of both U.S. and international law. The crisis seemed to abate after that. But now, sightings of undocumented immigrants in Hakumba are on the rise again. Local residents report new waves of migrants emerging from the rugged desert on foot each week. On September 13th, photographs obtained by East County Magazine show 62 people clustered in the shade of tamarisk trees beside Old Highway 80 in Hakumba after arriving on a remote desert trail. Most are young men, though a few women and children were present. Most appeared to be Asian this time. By contrast, most of the migrants in May said they were from Haiti, Turkey, Brazil, or Guatemala, according to residents who brought them water and survival supplies. The humanitarian organization We Are Humankind headed up a donation drive back in May to help those stranded migrants in Hakumba. For the migrants arriving this month, caring residents as well as Border Patrol provided water. The latest wave of migrants were loaded into vans while Border Patrol agents looked on. It is unclear where they were being taken. However, recent reports in other media indicate that Border Patrol agents have been dumping migrants at transit stations in the South Bay and North County since shelters for immigrants locally have been full. This is similar to the dropping off of migrants by Border Patrol agents at an El Cajon transit center last winter amid extreme cold. Supervisor Jim Desmond has voiced concerns over the dumping of vulnerable migrants, as well as the potential risk to national security should a terrorist slip into the U.S. in this manner. Another concern raised by media in some border states is the rise of cartels smuggling migrants into the U.S., sometimes over the border wall or through tunnels, and others waved through checkpoints after paying bribes to Border Patrol agents, ABC News reported. Border Patrol agents in Jacumba were reluctant to discuss the situation while standing guard over groups of migrants awaiting transport. But Public Information Officer Angel Moreno shared the dilemma faced by Border Patrol in processing the large numbers of people they encounter. He says that when apprehended, the migrants are screened to determine whether they have a credible fear of persecution or torture in their countries of origin. Those who do are set up with court dates in the U.S., which tend to be backed up for years. Those found not to have credible fear claims can be deported. For those awaiting court dates, facilities are provided for their long-term holding. But such facilities often lack sufficient space, so then migrants are released into the general population. This week, 10 News reports that San Diego migrant shelters are only accepting the most vulnerable individuals. Arriving in the U.S. after a long journey may not assure these travelers the safety they had hoped to find here. Lack of water, food, and shelter from extreme desert heat too often awaits newly arrived migrants in East County. For many, the future beyond that remains uncertain. While some have plans to reunite with family members in the U.S. while awaiting asylum hearings, others dropped off along desert highways or at a transit center may be vulnerable to trafficking at the hands of cartels or fall prey to other criminals, humanitarian experts fear, or they could wind up homeless. The large number of migrants have overwhelmed San Diego Rapid Response Network, a coalition of nonprofits that normally supports asylum seekers arriving in San Diego. Supervisor Desmond says this isn't humane. This isn't compassionate. He accuses the federal government of failing to protect both the people of San Diego and people seeking asylum in what he calls a broken immigration system. Nationally, Democrats have long called for immigration reform to make it easier for people to apply for asylum and to create a path for citizenship for undocumented immigrants who came to the U.S., often fleeing violence or oppression, if they have committed no other crimes except immigration violations. But Republicans in Congress for years have refused to consider any comprehensive immigration reforms, instead calling for ever stronger border security and completion of the border wall. The wall itself has resulted in a sharp increase in serious injuries among desperate immigrants, including a woman who died last week after falling off the wall along the U.S.-Mexico border in San Diego County. Supervisor Desmond, a Republican, concludes if the federal government wants to process asylum seekers, it must provide adequate resources to manage people entering our area. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Padre Dam Municipal Water District has appointed Ivan Andujar to fill the Division 4 seat formerly held by the late Augie Cares, who died August 1st. Cares had served on the board for 20 years, including as president as the board of directors. Andujar, an Alpine resident, will serve the remainder of Cares' terms, which expires in December 2024. The board selected Andujar after interviewing three candidates at its September 6th meeting. The two other candidates were Paul Tarpey and Kimberly Hales. Andujar has 19 years of experience working for a nonprofit organization and 14 years working for a Parks and Recreation Department in the city of Monrovia. He is currently the Chief Operations Officer for the East County Transitional Living Center, a homeless shelter which assists families and individuals transitioning off the streets. He also serves as chairman of the Alpine Mountain Empire Chamber of Commerce and is a member of the El Cajon Rotary Club, Lakeside Kiwanis, San Diego Leadership Foundation, and Community Emergency Response Team. Padre Dam, along with three other agencies in the midst of overseeing construction of the largest and most expensive public infrastructure project in the region's history, the $950 million Advanced Water Purification Program. The Water District, along with the City of El Cajon, the Helix Water District, and the County of San Diego, formed a joint powers authority to construct the AWP. The system will convert sewage to purified water enough to meet about 30% of the region's need. Construction of the massive project began last year and is estimated to begin delivering water to 500,000 customers by early 2026. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Cecily Chaminot.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Now here's the buzz. La Mesa City Council has voted to legalize backyard beekeeping. Councilman Jack Hsu introduced a motion on September 12th to adopt an ordinance patterned after the County of San Diego's beekeeping law. The ordinance can help solve multiple problems. Bees are important pollinators, but their numbers have been on the decline in recent years. The ordinance can help restore bee populations and enhance pollination of native plants, crops, fruit trees, and flowers. Carefully regulated beekeeping can also keep out diseases that harm bees, which are considered livestock under California state regulations. Wild bees have formed hives in unwanted areas in La Mesa, and aggressive Africanized bees have taken over many wild bee colonies. Allowing domestic beehives can help prevent wild bees from nesting in inappropriate areas. Hives must be inspected and are strongly regulated under the county ordinance, Councilman Hsu says. During public comments, beekeeper Daryl Kennedy noted that San Diego became a bee city in August, the largest city in the United States to do so, following a 10-year backyard beekeeping program that he says has been extremely successful and supported by universities. Kennedy assured the council, "We seek out bees from colder climates where the Africanized bees are unable to survive." Carlos Richardson, a San Diego Beekeeping Society board member who operates Mount Helix Bees, said he establishes beehives and manages bees in people's backyards, keeping the bees non-aggressive. Richardson explained, "I do a lot of bee removals all over the county," adding that some of his clients have asked how to set up their own beehives, but until now, La Mesa has not allowed this. Councilmember Laura Lothian asked if all the bees maintained by beekeepers create honey. The reply was sweet. "Yes," Richardson assured her. Councilmember Hsu moved to approve the ordinance. Councilmember Colin Parent seconded the motion. Mayor Mark Rapostathis quipped, "We'll still be an A-plus city, but we'll be friendly." The motion to legalize urban beekeeping passed 4-0, with Councilmember Patricia Dillard absent. Reporting for East County Magazine in La Mesa, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Cecily Chaminot with a public health alert. A case of tuberculosis, or TB, has been reported at San Diego State University, San Diego County's Public Health Services Department has announced. The department is working closely with the university and Aztec shops to notify employees who are potentially exposed on campus, mainly in the Charles B. Bell Pavilion. Exposures to the general public, students, and faculty are considered limited. The dates of potential exposure are from February 16th to June 22nd. Those known to have been potentially exposed have been directly notified and provided direction from health officials. TB is an airborne disease that is transmitted through inhaling bacteria in the air. The chance of infection is higher for people with prolonged indoor exposure to a person who is sick with TB. People sick with TB may be sick for many months before they are diagnosed, and as such, exposure periods can be long. Symptoms of active TB include persistent cough, fever, night sweats, and unexplained weight loss. Dr. Wilma Wooten, the county's public health officer, says most people who become infected after exposure to tuberculosis do not get sick right away. This is called latent TB infection. Some who become infected with TB will become ill in the future, sometimes even years later, if their latent TB infection is not treated. Blood tests and skin tests are effective to determine whether someone has been infected. People who test positive for TB but who don't have symptoms of active TB should get a chest x-ray and talk to a medical provider, since taking medicines for latent TB infection can cure the infection and keep these people from ever getting sick. It is important for people with symptoms of active TB and those who are immune compromised to see a medical provider to rule out active tuberculosis and to discuss treatment. You can get more information on this potential exposure by calling the County TB Control Program at 619-692-5565.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Cecily Chaminot with the Crime Beat Report. A homeless man with an extensive criminal record has been arrested for attempting to rob a 73-year-old man in El Cajon. The victim was jogging near Mollison Avenue and Greenfield Drive on September 5th, shortly after 11 a.m. when the suspect demanded money, threatened to tase the man, grabbed onto his arm, and reached for his wallet. The The man fought off his attacker and ran towards an apartment complex yelling for help, says Lieutenant Jeremiah Larson with the El Cajon Police Department. The suspect ran after the elderly man until he realized police had been called. Then he ran away. The victim provided a description and officers found Ian Farmer, a 41-year-old transient from San Diego, nearby. After the victim identified Farmer as the man who attacked and attempted to rob him, the suspect was arrested. Farmer is a registered sex offender and has a lengthy arrest history, including theft, vandalism, domestic violence, and sex with a minor, Lieutenant Larson says. Anyone with additional information regarding this incident is encouraged to contact the El Cajon Police Department at 619-579-3311. You can also remain anonymous by calling the Crime Stoppers tip line at 888-580-8477.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week.
This is Miriam Raftery.
And this is Cecily Shamino with this week's Destination East County.
As autumn arrives and Halloween draws near, East County has a wealth of festivals and events coming up. These include Julian's Autumn Jubilee and an Heirloom Apple Festival, Oktoberfests in La Mesa and El Cajon, the Borrego Days Desert Festival, Haunt Fest on Main in downtown El Cajon, a pumpkin bash and spooky camp over at Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine, and a Pumpkin Express train ride in Campo. Plus, there are live entertainment stars taking stage in East County, including comics Paula Poundstone and Randy Rainbow at the Magnolia, the rock artist Sting at San Diego State University, and El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells with his band and a benefit concert to help the homeless in El Cajon.
The Julian Autumn Jubilee takes place each weekend from September 23rd through October 29th. Enjoy Julian's famous apple season with activities including a hayride, cider pressing demonstration, hoedown and jug band show, petting zoo, pumpkin patch, reptile interactions, candle dipping, and painting craft. There's also an adventure package option if you want to try your hand at archery and tomahawk throwing. Other options include you pick veggies, herbs and berries, fairy and dinosaur garden crafts, and more. For tickets and details, visit fortcross.com.
That sounds like a lot of fun, Cecily. And here's another fun event coming up. From September 29th through October 1st, La Mesa Oktoberfest will be celebrating 50 years of Bavarian festivities in an effort to top its traditions for the last half century. Festivities include three stages of nonstop music featuring everything from traditional Bavarian and German music to live oompa bands, traditional rock bands, DJs, cover pop, and more, plus German cuisine and multiple beer gardens. The Family Fun event also features dachshund races, a kinder carnival, Ferris wheel, rock climbing wall, Glücklich games, an artisan market and food fair, Deutsch dance square, and keg tapping ceremony. For more information and a full schedule of events and beer garden tickets, you can visit lamesaoktoberfest.org.
Paula Poundstone will be performing at the Magnolia in El Cajon on Friday, September 29th at 6:30 p.m. The iconic comedian has starred in several HBO specials, hosts a weekly comedy podcast, Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, and is a panelist on NPR's comedy news quiz show, Wait, Don't Tell Me. She was the first female comic to perform stand-up comedy at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Her HBO special, Cats, Cops, and Stuff, marked the first time a female comedian won Best Comedy Special in the Cable Ace Awards. For tickets, visit concerts.livenation.com.
El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells and his all-star band will revisit pop and soul classics in a concert to benefit the East County Transitional Living Center, a facility which helps homeless individuals and families transition off the streets and transform their lives. This year's concert will be held on Saturday, September 30th, from 5 to 9 p.m. at the Magnolia Theater in downtown El Cajon, and you can get tickets at magnoliasandiego.com.
The German-American Societies of San Diego will host two weekends of Oktoberfest at their El Cajon headquarters on September 29th through October 1st and October 6th through the 8th. An opening day parade and keg tap kicks off the festivities Friday evening, September 29th, when the Oktoberfest queen will be crowned. A band direct from Germany will perform traditional German music, just as you'd hear in the beer gardens of Bavaria. You can also watch folk dancing, compete in games and contests, visit craft vendors, and take children to a kids' zone. Plus, savor authentic German food such as bratwurst, ox on the spit, potato salad, potato pancakes, sauerkraut, red cabbage, and German pastries, as well as German beers. A raffle will also be held, and the grand prize is a trip for two to Germany. Tickets are available online at events.germanclubsandiego.org.
Ranchita del Rayo in Julian invites you to a late-season apple festival, October 1st through 30th, from 9:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. The rancho is located at 1711 Highway 78 in Julian. Visitors can savor several varieties of heirloom apples grown in Julian and available just once a year. You can also taste apple cider made from the Ranchita's heirloom apples, pick apples yourself, and stroll through the vintage orchard. Homemade jams and preserves will be available as local foodies and apple enthusiasts share their specialties. For more information, visit Ranchita del Rayo on Facebook, and that's Rayo spelled R-E-O.
Famed rock artist Sting, otherwise known as Gordon Sumner, will perform live on October 4th at the Cal Coast Amphitheater at San Diego State University. The English musician was frontman for The Police before going solo. He has received 17 Grammy Awards and won Song of the Year for Every Breath You Take. He also received a Golden Globe, an Emmy, and 4 Academy Award nominations for Best Original Song. He was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2003, has performed at Buckingham Palace, Kennedy Center, and the White House, among other prominent venues. Tickets are available at SDSU Cal Coast Amphitheater's website.
The Pacific Southwest Railway Museum in Campo invites you to take a ride aboard the Pumpkin Express. You can celebrate Halloween on the decorated vintage rail cars along an excursion through San Diego's backcountry each Saturday and Sunday from October 7th through October 28th. After the train returns to the museum grounds, passengers will head to the display building where children and their parents can decorate pumpkins from the museum's pumpkin patch. Guests can also view Halloween scenes and haunted train rides. Pumpkins are included in the purchase of every toddler and child ticket on the Pumpkin Express, and additional pumpkins are available for purchase. Passengers of all ages are encouraged to arrive in costume. For tickets, visit the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum website at psrm.org.
The Randy Rainbow for President Comedy Show is coming to the Magnolia Theater in El Cajon on October 4th. Randy Rainbow is a 3-time Emmy-nominated American comedian, producer, actor, singer, writer, and satirist, best known for his popular YouTube series, The Randy Rainbow Show. His musical parodies and political spoofs have garnered him worldwide acclaim and 2 Emmy nominations. In 2019, he landed a spot on the New York Times Best Performances list, and in 2020, The Washington Post proclaimed Rainbow as Best Parody. For tickets, visit MagnoliaSanDiego.com.
The City of El Cajon presents Haunt Fest on Main, a family-friendly Halloween season festival on Friday, October 20th, from 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. in downtown El Cajon. The 10th annual Haunt Fest on Main features live music on 2 stages, plus other performances, costume contests, expanded carnival rides and games, a car show, candy challenge, kids' zone, face painting, pumpkin patch, craft and game booths, LED rock wall, inflatables for kids, plus a surprise feature of Movies in the Park. Find more information at hauntfest.org.
The 57th annual Borrego Days Desert Festival, produced by the Borrego Chamber of Commerce, will be held October 21st and 22nd at Christmas Circle Community Park in Borrego Springs. The festival includes live musical entertainment, art exhibits, a kids' zone, food vendors, artisans, a beer garden, a car show, and more. For details, visit borregodays.com.
Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine invites you to 2 wildly eerie events: a family-friendly pumpkin bash on October 29th, and a spooky campover October 28th and 29th. These events sell out quickly, so early reservations are recommended. You can camp out in the countryside and sleep under the stars with the sanctuary animals during the annual Spooky Campover fundraiser. This family-friendly, spooktacular overnight event includes campfire songs, pumpkin carving, a Halloween costume contest, and an all-ages haunted house. Enjoy the fun of the animal trivia challenge, make s'mores by the campfire, and sip hot cocoa at the Big Cat and Wildlife Sanctuary. The next morning is the pumpkin bash during the morning sanctuary visit. Come dressed in your best costume and watch the rescued big cats and bears devour their pumpkin treats. Pumpkins carved by campers the night before are stuffed with all kinds of delicious goodies for the animals. This event will take place rain or shine. For tickets, you can visit lionstigersandbears.org.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today, my very special guest is Jay Steiger. He is a candidate running for the Grossmont Union High School Board in Trustee Area 2. He's a middle school teacher who graduated from Monta Vista High School right in the Grossmont District. He's a parent of two children who attended schools in the district. He's been an officer on local and county PTA organizations, president of the Murdoch Elementary PTA. He was the La Mesa Spring Valley School District and Grossmont Union District School District Advisory Council Chair, and he chaired the Citizens Bond Oversight Committee, very important positions. He also teaches currently at Meadowbrook Middle School. He's been an active community volunteer in various organizations, as well as coaching youth soccer. And he says he's running because he's concerned about extremists who've targeted school boards in the 2024 election. And he wants to prioritize students' well-being and education. So, Jay, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam. Thank you very much for having me. And hello, San Diego.
Yeah. So I understand this is going to be an open seat because Elva Salinas has decided not to run again. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. I have met with Elva. We had a great discussion a few weeks back, and she confirmed what several others had told me, that no, she is not seeking the seat in 2024.
Okay. For those who are not familiar with the districts, can you tell us what communities are included in Trustee Area 2?
Absolutely. So if you kind of visualize around Hamishaw, about the point where if you went east, you'd go to Valhalla High School. That's the eastern edge of the Area 2. And then running westward, you're going through both the Rancho San Diego area, also near Fuerte Elementary, so the Fuerte neighborhoods, over to Mount Helix, Cal City Oro, and then into La Mesa. And it does include La Mesa as well. It doesn't go south of the 94, and it doesn't go east up into like Jamul or down to El Cajon or anything like that.
Yeah. So as someone who's gone through the district as a student and also brings a parent's perspective, since your kids went to schools in this district and you've been on the bond oversight board, all these different things, Jay, what is your perspective of how the district has changed in recent years for better or for worse?
So there are a lot of positives in the Grossmont district. You know, I'm thrilled that my kids were able to go there. A little side note, they both graduated from Grossmont High School, which of course is the oldest school in the district. It is also the flagship of the Grossmont High School.
It is. My kids went there too, I should say.
It is. And my mom and dad went there. So it's kind of cool, little legacy. As you mentioned, I went to Monta Vista High School, as did my siblings. And there's a lot of positives, and I'll kind of touch, I'll start with the bond committee. I was honored to serve on the bond committee and serve as the chair of the bond committee. I was wonderful progress being done. And of course, you can see it all across the district. Every single school has new facilities. Some amazing buildings went up, including, of course, the theater at Grossmont High School, which is just an amazing structure. That's a huge positive. And they serve the kids because they're modern classrooms, facilities. And that's a giant step forward because the district was getting worn. It was old in many cases, and this is a big positive. The district has a strong reputation of being able to run good budgets, good oversight, transparency. They get high rankings for being careful with their money. And they also have high rankings for quality staff, teachers in particular, and running great programs. And they have some great academic programs. There are AP courses all over the district, good A to G satisfaction, and sending many kids off to both our community colleges and four-year institutions. And of course, excuse me, they also have highly regarded career tech programs as well, auto shop, health programs, engineering programs that are for students that either are interested in blending that into college or are just not interested in heading off to a college program at this time, but very much getting ready for a work program as well. So all of those are really strong positives for the district. Mm-hmm. great group of kids. You know, I've met many, known many over the years that attend our school, wonderful youth coming through, but there's some poor leadership decisions. And, you know, that is a concern. It is not the first time that's happened either. One of the things I say is that this district, not all that long ago, had an entirely dysfunctional board. They were getting in the news for all the wrong reasons. It was kind of embarrassing.
I remember we covered some of those embarrassing stories.
And they voted, you know, sadly enough and embarrassingly enough, they voted to endorse Proposition 8, which, besides the fact that those of us who believe in inclusion and equality found that to be a reprehensible decision, I have conservative friends that served on, for example, the La Mesa Spring Valley District mm-hmm. Board that said, you know, that was ridiculous. That has nothing to do with classroom education. They really should have just stayed out of that. And, you know, they can vote the way they want. But that wasn't a decision the district itself should have made as a governing agency. And so, unfortunately, we're kind of seeing some of that happening now again. And it needs to stop. We need to support our kids, support our staff, make the right decisions, be on the right side of inclusion, and make sure that we're not getting sidetracked by culture war arguments and political arguments so that we can properly serve our kids. And that serves the better interests of our community. I've said it before, stand by it, that strong schools make strong communities. And we need to represent that.
Yeah. You know, on that same note, depression and suicide among teenagers is a very disturbing trend. It's on the rise. You have a degree in psychology, and you've been outspoken against the district's, the board majority's recent decision to get rid of their longtime mental health services provider, San Diego Youth Services, a move that critics said targets vulnerable LGBTQ students. Can you please elaborate on your concerns about this and what steps you would hope to take, you know, if elected, if you had, you know, I suppose, like-minded colleagues on the board to do so?
Yeah, I disagree. It's very perplexing to me. And as I've called out for this, and others have echoed this as well, is mm-hmm. the reasons have never been fully explained, and they're very questionable.
It seemed like the company was just trying to comply with state law. So I would think any other company would have to do the same thing. So it is a little bit baffling.
It is. It's absolutely perplexing. And really, I think the board majority owes the community a proper explanation of this. And if they, you know, I think it's a mistake, and I think they should reverse it. But if upon reflection, you know, they say, you know what, we shouldn't have done this, then yeah, fix it. You know, reverse it, make the right choice. People have commented on that. And so, yes, I just want to comment as an educator myself, as a teacher, it's very personal to me. We work with young people, and this is a weird time of life. I mean, I think we all can agree that being a human in the modern era is kind of stressful just on the natural. There's been a lot of stuff that's happened, and we're all kind of processing this layer of stress that we deal with. But for being a kid, that is doubly so. It's just it's tough.
Yes, and in this era of social media, when there's online bullying and there's so many more pressures on them that you and I didn't have growing up. So,
100%. It's been shown that kids that are on social media to too high of a degree are much more at risk for developing depression and feelings of low self-worth. And so to have a program in place, it's critical. And I mean, I've seen it in my own classroom and dealt with it in my own classroom. And the importance of giving those kids that supportive structure and those programs that have been shown to work is absolutely essential. And so again, it's baffling that the board would make such an odd decision. And for reasons that appear to be tied to concerns from an outside person from a neighboring district about the LGBTQ community. Mm-hmm. And that community is at highest risk for mental health issues and suicide. And so there is double the need. But to flip back, the program serves everybody, all students. So it's supporting every student and not just a subgroup, but that subgroup in particular absolutely needs that extra support because all those kids' lives are precious and we have to be there for them.
Yeah. I mean, around the country, we're seeing efforts by extremists to go after more than the LGBTQ community. You know, we're seeing like getting rid of textbooks that teach about climate change and trying to whitewash history so you don't hear anything, you know. I mean, the most extreme, I think, is Florida, where they're saying that slavery was good for Black people, and which is insane. You've talked about wanting to teach based on facts and critical thinking. Can you elaborate on why you think teaching students today critical thinking is so important?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, these are the future of our country. I know that's a kind of a overstated, but it's true. These young people are the future of the country. And we want thinkers out there. We don't want robots out there. And people can say, oh, you're pushing, you know, a political agenda. And I would say back, you know, the true educators, we expose kids to information. We don't tell them, oh, you should vote this way.
Right.
We expose them to information and we foster discussions. Just as a quick side note, I'm teaching Rome in my class right now. They're learning about the positives and the negatives. They're learning about how the Roman Empire developed commerce and trade and cultural connections, mm-hmm. but also disadvantaged groups and harmed groups in the process. And so they reflect and discuss on that. And we absolutely must do that with modern history as well. America has done amazing things. We've also made terrible and tragic mistakes. We need to be aware of that and just be honest about it and talk about it. And
yeah, and not only with slavery, but with the treatment of Native Americans, and you know, we can go on down the list. Are we seeing in the Grossmont district, you know, any efforts like that to whitewash history in our textbooks or ban books in school libraries that you're aware of? Is it a hypothetical, or is this something that is actually happening or being supported by any of those current board members?
So I can say I haven't seen personally specifics of direct intention to, you know, say outright, oh, you know, we can't do this. Mm-hmm. There are rumors, but one thing I can speak to, and this was talked about at the meeting on Tuesday night by more than one person, is there are books that are highly regarded and have been approved in other schools in California and around the country, mm-hmm. and are sitting on a waiting list for approval for final distribution into the district. And there wasn't a large number that were cited, but they were mentioned during this meeting. And the question was raised, why are they still sitting there? This is not something that was just approved like a couple of months ago where it might be taking time to work through the pipeline. Some of these books have been sitting around for years.
Can you give us an example or two of something?
I'll see if I can grab my paperwork, which is
it's not a big deal.
That's right in my hands, but
just in general terms,
we can get that to you. But in particular, these two books that were referenced were ones that focused on inclusion for the LGBT community. Mm-hmm. And I believe there was one that was specific to the BIPOC community as well.
But
in particular,
Black, Indigenous, and people of color community, which you would not think would even be controversial. But
yeah, and that's the other thing. It wasn't like somebody tried to bring something in and say, oh, yeah, you should take this because I like it. These were highly regarded books.
They've been screened
and used in other districts. And I mean, I like to joke, but it's truth. My kids in my classroom read banned books. They're not banned in the Poway district, mm-hmm. but these are books that have flown up on radar in one reason or another in other districts for reasons that are beyond
because I've read
all of them.
You know, stuff you and I read that we thought nothing of as kids. Yeah. Charlotte's Web. I couldn't believe that was on a banned book list. Huck Finn. I mean, it's crazy. I want to talk about academics a bit. Mm-hmm. The pandemic disrupted education for students. And I know in many places, students are still struggling to catch up to that. What more can be done to assure that students catch up and have the best shot at being prepared for higher education, whether that's a community college or a four-year college or university, Jay?
Absolutely. It's hugely important. COVID learning loss is real. Media reports, although sometimes there's a little bit of hyperbole, but the base information is absolutely correct. We are seeing the effect of learning loss. I taught during COVID. I understand Zoom was tough, and coming out of it was weird as well. We're processing that. So taking the academics specifically and kind of putting the mental health not away because they're co-joined, but just putting it on the sideline for a second. there are proven strategies to help students recover learning loss. I'm 100% in support of those. Things like small group work and tutoring, dedicated time, and focusing on, you know, core skills that are needed to advance the student. You're kind of prioritizing where they need to go to catch themselves up. These are proven strategies and absolutely should be used to bring the students' learning up. They might cost some money, but they're very cost effective in the long term. And I would say, as a board member, that is money absolutely well spent, because you're investing in those kids moving forward into life and yeah. being productive and part of society. There are some other things. I might happen to teach language arts in a co-taught format. And I know Grossmont has worked with co-taught as well. And I would say lean more into that as well. And that is where you actually have two credentialed teachers in the classroom. And it is a fantastic way to maximize the learning with the kids. It allows you a lot more flexibility for interventions, mm-hmm. for dividing your classroom so you can do more focused work. For, you know, identifying where your groupings could possibly be so that you can help the kids lift each other up. Those are proven strategies and absolutely should be embraced and employed, because I tell my kids, I used to teach Avid, and Avid stands by any student can go to college. Absolutely. And I believe that any student can go to college. It is not a matter of, oh, you, but not you. It's a matter of will and support. And I also, of course, recognize that not every kid is ready or wanting to go to college personally right after high school. I respect that. There are lots of other pathways like the CTE that I talked to that are available for them and should be supported for them. But any kid can succeed academically, and we absolutely must never let them stay behind continually. You know, we need to get in there and intervene and lift them up.
That's a great attitude. How would you, you've mentioned you want to foster stronger ties between the Grossmont district and the K through 8 feeder districts on your website, Jay. Do you have specific ideas for how to do that?
Absolutely. We're seeing some of it, and I just think the territory is open for more of it. It is being embraced in other districts around the community and around the state. Full disclosure, my father was a community college professor. Before that, he was a teacher in the middle school and high school realm. And so I have a lot of very
strong, from an education background then.
Yes. Yeah, so my mom was a teacher as well. And then she became a counselor, and then she became an administrator in community college and Excellent. Worked in career tech. So there's a lot of background that I come from on that, very supportive. I do understand, as an academic teacher, that there are sometimes some concerns about, well, wait a second. If you start doing replacement of high school academic courses with community college courses, that imperils staffing at the high school level. And I'm 100% protective of my colleagues and peers, no matter what district they teach in. You know, you should be supported as an academic teacher in your district. But there's a lot of opportunities, and I'll just give a couple here. Career tech is a big one. Obviously, there's some great high school programs out there, and we support those and enhance those. But the reality is, they're not going to be able to hit every single student interest for potential career tech. And that is an absolute low-hanging fruit for dual enrollment, that the community colleges can work with the high schools to identify where are the gaps and set those courses up so that students can do that. Then the other is foreign language. There are so many wonderful languages out there. I mean, California is like this amazing multicultural place. We're one of the most diverse places, not just in the country, in the world. And we can lean into that as well, because, again, not every language is going to be able to be taught at the high school level. And so there's opportunity, just to give a quick real world example in Grossmont District. Granite Hills recently ended their French language program. Understandable. But Grossmont and Grossmont Cuyamaca still have French language programs. There's the opportunity right there for students who want to do French as their foreign language.
Maybe we should be teaching, you know, Arabic or some of the other languages from the large refugee groups that are coming here. We have more Iraq War refugees in San Diego County, in East County, El Cajon mostly, than in any county in America.
100%. Arabic, Chaldean, Arabic, Farsi, Pashto, there are
some
lots
of the African
of
languages.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That. And Spanish, of course.
Oh, yes. Well, I think the Spanish is that's going to
be. We already have that one.
But, you know, there are opportunities for advanced levels up at the community college that if students could continue on past what maybe the high school could offer them.
There you go. Jay, you served on the bond oversight committee, as we mentioned, a real taxpayer watchdog opportunity there. So you have some fiscal experience. You've also mentioned you're supporting a future school bond measure. Can you tell the voters why you think that's important?
Oh, absolutely. So I'm personally grateful to the voters of East County because over and over, they were willing to go to the ballot box and put all party lines aside and support school bonds to support our kids and our teachers. And this happened multiple times in Grossmont. Grossmont delayed a while. They didn't do bonds in the 70s and the 80s. And so there was a real need when the first bond came down. And they figured out that they needed to do follow-ons. And I'm grateful for the community for supporting those. But just like we've discovered with our bridges and our roads and our dams and, you know, our harbors and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And those are, you know, people that live in a house. Yeah, your house wears out over time. It's the nature of existence.
Exactly.
Things wear out. And so there is an ongoing need. It's called deferred maintenance. And you fix what you can, you prioritize it, but certain things don't get fixed. And the longer you go, the more worn out they are and the harder it is or the more expensive. So there is going to be a need both to construct some continuing new facilities for the district to keep us, you know, top-notch and competitive, but also to make sure we're keeping tabs on all our existing. And this was in our bond committee. Everybody agreed. There might have been a little difference as to when, but this was an agreement. And this was also something that our partners from the agencies that the district works with for the construction would also note as well that, yeah, this is going to have to be something done. So I'm certainly in support of it. You know, it's a bond decision to it's a board decision to not take lightly. You kind of, you spec it out, you figure out, well, what's needed. You know, you're never going to get everything. So what's a fair amount to ask our community to come to? And then you present it to the community in the future. But I'm 100% behind that. You know, let's keep it rolling. Let's continue to support great facilities to support our kids, our staff, and our community.
Very good. Is there anything else, any other issue or issues in the Grossmont Union High School District, Jay, that you would like to address that I haven't already asked you about?
The only other thing I would just say is that, again, I want to fly back to we need to do right by all our kids. The watch phrase that I stand by is all means all, and we really need to embrace that. All kids at all times and all staff as well. And full inclusion. I cannot say enough about the fact that I'm 100% on board with full inclusion at all times. And this is the standard. The standard in California is inclusion. The people that do oppose inclusion, they're actually the ones that are causing the disruption and the drama. And we want to get to a drama-free district so we can move on to supporting our kids and lifting up their academics, making sure they've got a 21st century education, that the critical thinking is there, the science knowledge is there, they're ready for college. They're ready for career tech and they're ready for life. They've got that emotional growth so that they can go into young adulthood and become productive, strong members of our society. So let's agree that all means all, everyone is included. And then let's get into really working on building up our education for our kids to be the strongest it possibly can and make sure our staff is world class and they want to be there and they're retained and they feel respected and included in this discussion.
Great.
And thank you. Again, thank you.
Last question, and that is, can you tell us who a few of your key endorsements are, Jay, and also where people can get more information about your candidacy or get involved in your campaign if they choose to?
Absolutely. Thank you. So my website's pretty easy. It's www.jaysteiger.com.
And that's Steiger.
Correct. Jaysteiger.com. Okay. Very straightforward. You know, we'd love to hear from people and love your support. We've been fundraising since June, you know, getting into this early, and also just start a dialogue with people. I'd love to hear people's ideas. What do you want to see in a 21st education, whether you've got active kids or whether you're a young person or whether you're a retiree? I want to hear your voices in this. Let's talk about it. And then the other is to go over briefly, I'll just say I'm absolutely honored. I was very recently endorsed by Tony Atkins,
President Pro Tem of the State Senate.
I've also been endorsed by State Assembly Member Chris Ward, by San Diego City Council Person Raul Campillo, by local La Mesa Spring Valley trustees Costin and Tiffany. And then I've also been endorsed by Grossmont Community College trustees Justison and Schurer. And then there's some others as well that I've been endorsed with for some other local offices around. And the list is on my website, and I'm continuing to add endorsements. And I thank them. I appreciate their trust in me. The only other two things I'll mention real quick that I've had forgot is I'll do serve as the current vice chair of the Valadiero Community Planning Group. I'll say this, I love working with my community planning group members because we do come from a cross-section of political stream, and we put that at the door and we work for the community, and that's what a school board should do as well. And I also recently was appointed to the board of the Grossmont Mount Helix Improvement Association, and I'm honored to work with them because they just straight up work for our community and the betterment of our area.
I'm a member of that one myself.
Yes, there you go.
You're active in the La Mesa Arts Foundation, and you also coach youth soccer.
And I used to serve on the board of the Mesa Arts Foundation. I was honored to be a member of that for over 5 years. Great work. These nonprofits and these community groups, they just really put the heart into our community 100%.
Very good. Well, good luck to you. Listeners, if you just tuned in, we've been speaking with Jay Steiger. He is a candidate running for the Grossmont Union High School District Board in Trustee Area 2. Jay, thank you so much for joining us today on our East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso.
Thank you, Miriam. Thank you, San Diego.
CAL FIRE has issued an urgent warning regarding drones operating illegally in firefighting airspace and impeding firefighting efforts. Aerial unmanned drones have caused temporary suspension of critical aerial firefighting operations at half a dozen fires so far this year, CAL FIRE reports. The Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, regularly implements temporary flight restrictions around wildfire areas to protect the safety of aircraft helping to fight fires. All aircraft, including drones, are prohibited from entering these restricted areas unless they are operated by an agency directly involved in wildfire suppression efforts. Even when a temporary flight restriction is not in effect, drone pilots are strongly urged to avoid flying near wildfires, since it is a crime to interfere with firefighting operations. CAL FIRE Chief Jake Scholand, who heads up the agency's tactical air operation, says, "The danger of flying drones near wildfires cannot be overstated. Such actions jeopardize lives and have immediate consequences for firefighting agencies' response efforts. When drones are detected near wildfires, fire response agencies ground their aircraft to prevent the risk of a mid-air collision. This delay poses a significant threat to the safety of the firefighters on the ground, as well as to residents and properties in nearby communities. Such delays can also allow wildfires to expand, putting more lives and resources at risk. People who operate drones without proper authorization over wildfire-affected areas may be found in violation of federal, state, and local laws and regulations. Drone operators found to have interfered with wildfire suppression efforts or to have endangered manned aircraft or people on the ground may face criminal prosecution as well as civil penalties of up to $20,000. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Cecily Chaminot.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.